It's time for your weekly dose of Wayne's Comics.
Welcome to episode 390 of the Wayne's Comics Podcast. Thanks so much for listening. It's always a real pleasure when I get to talk with Philip Seavey, the creator of Paradox, also the artist on Tomb Raider, The Freeze, and The House. All great books. And he has a new 5-issue miniseries coming out called Triage. As usual, Philip wears many of the hats in this great book, which we discuss. We delve into the characters and what kind of wonderful things we might be seeing in the months ahead in the 5 issues of this book. We talk about which conventions he'll be attending, including next week's San Diego Comic-Con, as well as where he is on social media so you can keep up with his wonderful artwork and writer-artist creations. There's a lot to get to in this episode, so let's get on with the show. It's always great to talk to Philip Seavey, one of the creators who does so much in the comics industry and puts them all together into a winning package so many times. How are you doing today, Philip?
I'm doing good, Wayne. How about you?
Good. It's good to talk with you. Let's see. You did Paradox, which I think that was the first book of yours I came across.
I think so, yeah.
And then I came across The Freeze, which I still love with a passion. Is that coming back? I got to ask.
Dan and I have plans on what we want to do with that. We're just waiting to hear if we have the green light to go ahead. Hopefully after San Diego next week, I'll have a better idea of where we're sitting.
Gotcha. Okay, so for people who don't know, The Freeze is all about a guy who goes under a table, and when he comes back up, the whole rest of the world is frozen.
Yep.
And he can unfreeze them by touching them, but then unexpected things happen, shall we say. And it was just such a 5-issue series that just I couldn't wait for the next issue on that one. That's just fantastic stuff.
Well, thank you.
Great, great, great stuff. And let's see, what other ones have you worked on? Let's talk about that.
Yeah, I mean, as an artist, I worked on Tomb Raider. I've done about 16 issues of Tomb Raider for Dark Horse. And then I did The Tithe with Matt Hawkins. We did the second volume of that, so issues 5 through 8. And I've done a handful of covers here and there and some one-shots and things like that.
Cool. So you've got good. All this good experience helps you do that. Now, the way I understand the book is pronounced, the title is called Triage. Is that how you're pronouncing it?
That is correct, yes.
Because it could be Triage.
Yes, I noticed.
Well, the reason why I say that, we'll get into the story of that pretty quickly here.
Yeah, that's how I pronounce it. But you're right. It is picking up with the tri, which is ties into the 3 characters I have as main leads for the book.
Why don't you talk about that? What is the book about?
Sure. So Triage is a sci-fi action adventure story. It follows our main character, whose name is Evelyn Pierce. She goes by Evie. I mean, she's in the middle of a loss of identity. She's gotten to where her goal in life, she's where she wants to be, and then realizes, like, oh, maybe this isn't who I am and this isn't what makes me happy. So how do I now redefine myself when everything I thought I was supposed to be is not what I want to be? Mm-hmm. And in the middle of all that, she wakes up in a strange place alongside a snarky superhero and a hardened post-apocalyptic war commander. And they're being hunted by this being called the Hunter. And if he kills them, all existence ceases to be. So they've got to stay alive and figure out why they were brought together, what their importance is, and how to defeat the Hunter.
I was looking at a release, and mm-hmm. the top sentence says, "What do you do when all existence hinges on you?"
Yes.
And then there's a sentence underneath that says, "Evie Pierce must figure out who she is and what she can do to help save the world."
Triage. So that's pretty good stuff. Of course, you know, here you are blending different genres. You know, you've got the post-apocalyptic one, the superhero one, and you know, realistic type person with the nurse and stuff. Mm-hmm. And I had the chance. You made it possible for me to read the first two issues, and I'm hooked. Like all
oh, good.
I really loved it. I just thought it was great. Now, first thing I have to always say is I'm big on strong female characters. And you have three strong female characters, basically, that are not the same. And I always tell the story of female friends I have who want every woman to be, especially a lead woman, to be a maternal person. Mm-hmm. And you have the same person, but three different situations, and they're very different from each other, which I really enjoyed. Of course, I love that. I can't wait to show this to my friends.
No, thank you.
See, they don't have to all be maternal. They
can
be
exactly. Different. Yeah.
So how did you come up with it? I mean, where did the idea come from?
You know, it's an interesting one. It mainly came from my love of comics, and I'll explain what that means. But like, I love comics. I've loved comics for as long as I can remember. And one of the things that I really love about the art form and the medium is just the limitless possibilities and craziness you can do in a story. I look at, you know, I grew up reading late 80s, early 90s X-Men, and that is some of the craziest stories and storytelling like that has ever been. And it just, the idea of, you know, you've got time travel and you've got this, that, and the other thing, and all these really fascinating, mind-blowing ideas that are so comic book that you just don't see and can't really be done in any type of TV or film. And I enjoy comic books that translate easily into other medium. But I was thinking a lot about what makes comics special and unique and what you can do in them as an art form that you can't do, that doesn't translate as well. And that's kind of where Triage came from, was like, I want to do superheroes and I love post-apocalyptic stuff and I love philosophical sci-fi. And I just wanted to come up with a story that really embraced the insanity and cross-genre appeal that comics have. And that's kind of where taking that idea and then my love of all these different genres and just meshing them together came up with a story that allowed me to do all those things together.
See, it's interesting because I always like to say that in comics you have an unlimited sci-fi budget or a special effects budget because you get to do all these different things and all these different kinds of things. In fact, the way the book starts out really fascinated me because at first I was thrown a little bit. You've got the three, we get introduced to the three different characters individually.
Correct.
And I didn't quite get that the first time I went through and I had to go back and say, wait a second, what happened here? And then when I got that, I guess, okay, now I get it. Now I get what you're doing here. You're actually introducing each character in their own situation at the beginning.
Yeah. I had a good friend of mine, David Stoll, who's a great comic book artist and writer as well, was kind of helping me, not necessarily writing it along the way, but he was like my idea wall, someone to bounce off of. And when I had the first issue completely done, he sat down and read it. And then he said he reread it. And then he's like, I read it three times in a row. He's like, it's super dense. Mm-hmm. But yeah, the same thing. He said each time I would kind of peel back a different layer of the story and start to understand it a little bit more. And especially in those first two issues, who these characters are and how they relate to each other is something I both want to keep a little under wraps just for people who've never read it. And then also, you know, by the time we're into the middle of issue two, we've kind of got the basics down so we can move forward into what they have to do next type thing.
Okay, I don't want to spoil too much, but you actually named the superhero.
Correct, yes.
She has a name that I came across, and I even has a fan club, apparently,
in she her does, universe, yes.
Which I got a kick out of. So I don't know if you want to mention that or you want to wait for people to read the book to get that.
No, yeah. So our superhero is named as Orbit. That is her superhero code name, and her fan club is the Orbit Overachievers, if I remember right.
Which I got a kick out of. I have to smile because, you know, fan clubs are always that way. They always say something in such a way that makes the fans seem great or better, or, you know, as far very as other people go, yeah, they are the greatest guys in the whole world. And so that's what this does. It sets that up. She actually meets a young girl who wants to give her something, and she says, "You are one of my Orbit Overachievers," she says. Funny line. See, but that lends to another point of yours, is I always love the dialogue that you
do. Thank you.
It's always great. The characters really breathe and live. And of course, the very first part when we see Evie as a nurse, she has one of those experiences that all nurses have to go through, shall we say. Now, more than that, I won't spoil, but it's a really interesting thing to see her as a nurse. And of course, I used to work at a hospital, so I could relate to this stuff.
Oh, perfect. Yeah. So my wife is actually a labor and delivery nurse and has been for 15 some odd years, longer than I've known her. And that first page opening scene, which, like you said, we'll leave it for readers to see, but is an experience that happened to her. And it was always so funny and so absurd that I just kind of, as soon as I decided Evie was going to be a nurse, I was like, I know how I'm going to open the book, because it's one of those, like, I laughed at, it's one of those, you're either on board with the book after page one or it's not for you. So,
I think people are going to be able to relate to it. I think it's just, you know, and again, the humanity of the different characters to me is they're very human and very real, but they're not the same. And I think, you know, that's a real accomplishment, I think, particularly, as I said, like with female characters, especially leads. I'm always enamored with somebody who can do a female lead that stands out, and you've got three of them that stand out to me. I really like that. Talk about, you know, the diversity in the female characters and doing that. I mean, you know, granted, you have somebody to base Evie, and see, I don't know if that's our Evie. Do we want to call that our Evie in the quote unquote real world?
Yeah, let's call it our Evie. That's a good way to say it.
And then we got the superhero, and then we've got the post apocalyptic one. It's kind of the way I broke them down.
Yeah, for sure. I think, you know, one of the core narrative aspects to the story for me is just this idea of how we define ourselves and what different ways that we can define ourselves. And from there, having three different leads from three different backgrounds, I chose to take one facet of how I feel, perception or definition of who we are, identity, and then kind of give one character that main facet. Whether it's internal, whether it's external, whether it's perception, each character I kind of built around this idea of examining a different facet of our identity. And that was kind of where their personalities started. And, you know, there's more to it that relates kind of to surprises and mysteries that go along with the series. But it just giving myself each one a defining characteristic of the narrative I was wanting to focus on from a thematic standpoint allowed me to explore them in different ways. And when you have three people who are interacting, I tried really hard, and thank you for the compliment, to make sure that as they were talking and working with each other, they didn't all sound like the same person, because that can be very easy to just use the same voice for every person. But I tried really hard to define them differently.
And yet you did. You know, they are the same person, basically. It's just, you know, the circumstances are different. Are you talking about, like, the old argument about, the situation versus who we are inside? Is that what you're dealing with here?
Yeah, very much. And I think it's not just, you know, are our thoughts who we are? Are our actions who we are? Are the way that people perceive us who we are? Those are kind of the three different facets of identity I wanted to look at from a narrative and thematic standpoint. Is what is it that makes us who we are? And it's from one of those three different points of view. And throughout the book, in the way that you do with themes, I try to explore those. So we'll see how successful I am by the time everyone gets to the fifth issue. But I try to come to some sort of conclusion on how it is that I feel we are as individuals.
So there's probably see similarities and differences between themselves.
Yeah, very much. And I think, you know, with those different characters or different facets, they're there to teach each other important points about each idea, what works and what doesn't work, and the advantages or disadvantages in narrowing how we see ourselves to one idea.
Yeah, see, your book, as always, your writing always makes me – I have questions, and I always want to figure out the answers. You know, the description says Evie Pierce must figure out who she is. Now, are all three of them named Evie Pierce?
No, not exactly.
Okay. Oh, okay. Something we shouldn't deal in?
Yeah, something I think we'll find out a little bit more further on. Yep.
We want people to read this good stuff. So, so basically, this is talking about the nurse Evie.
Correct. Yes.
Okay. Mm-hmm. All right, so maybe as we go farther along, other people will come in, their names and stuff will come into, and their situations will come into play.
Yep.
So it's really interesting stuff. And of course, there's a sci-fi thing, and I don't know if you want to delve into that too. I hate to. This is when a book's not out yet, I'm always questioning. I don't want to give something away that you don't want to have people know yet. There's a thing that connects them, shall we say.
Yes, yes. I think we can say at this point, because I think it's in press releases and in the previews that will be coming out, is that, you know, the thing that connects them, which it delves into a little bit more in the series, but is basically like they need to band together or all universe in existence is going to be destroyed. So,
well, you used your particular phrase. You said they need to band together.
Correct.
Which has another meaning that I got, that if you read the book, you get to it, shall we say. More than that, we probably shouldn't get into. But see, I always love when there's layers of meaning to something. When you talked about your friend reading it different times and getting different mm-hmm. things out of it. And that's what this one. I went through the one, and then I read one again, and then I went into two.
Okay.
And I was just fascinated by the way that different things come to light in the second issue about that. So I just, you know, you're writing, and you're known probably for your artwork, but yet your writing, I always think, really excels too, because, you know, you have all these layers of things going on, and I always, you know, not many artists think that way, shall we say. There's a lot of people are visual thinkers that are mm-hmm. artists, and so they look at things from a visual standpoint, but you look at it from a wide variety of standpoints. And that's the thing about your writing that I always think I really enjoy, is, you know, you do these things and you go places that I don't expect a writer/artist to go.
Oh, thank you. Yeah, I know. I was talking to someone the other day, and they were like, you know, asking me about the book, like, where did it come from, or why did you have to tell it? And, you know, I talked about both the idea of the all the different genre and craziness that I could do is the visual appeal to me. That's what's exciting and fun to draw. But the thematic and narrative side about exploring who we are as people and trying to define ourselves and struggle through a loss of identity, that's the portion of creating a work that keeps me coming back and keeps me fueled. I've been working on this book at this point now about 9 months, and I've got another 3 or 4 more months worth of work on just the 5 issues. So it'll be a solid year to 14 months for 5 issues for me. So in order to keep going every day, the thing that draws me back is dealing with those thematic questions and ideas that to me are very personally tie into experiences I've had in my life. And that's kind of, it's that second aspect of not just drawing something fun, but something I need to sink my teeth into in order to be excited and keep coming back day after day for a year.
Mm-hmm. Now, I talked a little bit about the Frozen and hoping that another one of those was going to come. When you get to the 5th issue of this one, are we going to want more? Have you set it up in such a way that we'll want to see more of Triage, maybe Fourage or something?
I like that. You know, in talking to my editor, we talked about a lot of stuff in planning the series. And as I sat down to outline it, and then especially when as I got to scripts, I kept changing kind of my finale in such a way that felt more complete and more closed. Mm. So it's a 5-issue miniseries, and I feel that I ended on a very satisfying conclusion to where it doesn't feel like a cliffhanger. Mm. I'm unable to write something without a little bit of a door crack open just for the possibility for more, but I'm trying really hard to just set up and then execute a really strong 5-issue story, so that if it doesn't sell amazingly, then that's okay, because the story will be told. So I guess we'll see.
Okay. Now, I got to go back to the name Triage again, which, of course, is a medical term. We didn't. Mm-hmm. I wanted to get a little more into that, because triage usually, and as I worked in a hospital, as I said, triage is like preparation or people being looked over before a doctor sees them.
Yeah, preparation, diagnosis, you know, trying to examine what's wrong, or if it's to a point where we need to do something more. It kind of goes into some of the ideas of exploration, of trying to figure out what's wrong, which is on multiple levels a theme within the story.
So triage actually has something to do with like Evie and trying to figure out who she is.
Yeah, thematically. I wouldn't say we don't end up in a triage room per se hospital. But yeah, it ties into the core and theme. And like you brought up also, the first 3 letters in triage are try. We're dealing with 3 characters. So it's got a good of a double meaning. I owe a big debt of gratitude to a writer, Teeny Howard, for helping me come up with that, because it was a different title for a long time. Mm-hmm. But it was one that was a little bit trickier to say and stuff like that. And she's like, I think you just need a simpler, more striking title. So we sat and brainstormed for a while, and she helped me come up with that, which I think hits a lot stronger than what we had before.
Mm-hmm. Now, I've got to talk about the covers.
Okay.
Because the covers to me are really, you know, if you talk about like sci-fi type stuff, the first one has the bad guy on the cover.
It does, yes.
I understand it, which is an unusual place to start. Normally you start – see, the second one has the superhero, has Orbit on the cover.
It does, so yeah.
I was fascinated that you chose to start the book with the villain on the cover. Talk about that. I mean, why did you decide to go in that order?
Sure. I mean, there's a couple different reasons. One is I just felt, as far as visual striking for a first issue, he was the most striking character and one of the most, like, you know, would stand out and make you pick it up and go, like, what is this? Like, I want to know more about. I really enjoy his design, and I think it kind of worked really well with the cover we decided to go. Another reason is, and I'm this isn't necessarily any spoiler territory. This is just giving you guys a heads up. The covers are going to go. The Hunter is on the first cover. Mm-hmm. Orbit is on the second cover. Mm-hmm. Marco, who is the post-apocalyptic commander, is on the third cover. Mm-hmm. Tabitha, or Tab, who is Evie's girlfriend, is on the fourth cover. Ah. And then on the fifth cover is Evie herself. So I'm almost counting down backwards in relation to character importance to Evie herself. Okay. From the beginning to the end. And there's you know, as you've seen, the first two covers have a similar design, I guess you could say. They don't look identical, but there's a similar kind of motif, and we're carrying that through all the way, all five covers.
Well, you've also on the first cover got a triangle.
Correct.
Involved, and of course that's where the tri and the tree or whatever you want to call it, and the triage is in there because that's not. I got it now. Of course, now it's also on the second cover too. I didn't notice it on both covers.
It is.
Wow.
It's going to be a recurring design across all the covers. And there's a couple of spots throughout the book it will be hidden in the art somewhere. And we'll let people see if they can spot those and figure out kind of their importance. So
that's really cool. I love the, you know, all this kind of stuff interests me. You know, it's very good to have something that challenges your thinking, you know, not only visually, but with all these different elements involved in it. I like those kinds of things because it makes me think, which I
love. Thank you. Yeah, that's what I'm trying. Dark Horse has been fantastic to work with. I almost feel like the hyper kid in the corner who's constantly like raising my hand, be like, oh, wait, I've got another idea. Can I do this? Or can I do this? Or can I do that? And they've been really great to help kind of facilitate any type of craziness, whether it's their design team or their PR and marketing or social media, or I'm working with the convention people on one thing or another. So they've been great to help support all these ideas I have in not just the book itself, but executing it and marketing it and getting the word out.
Mm-hmm, which is great.
Yeah.
Dark Horse comes up with some of the most creative stuff out there. And I always feel your stuff is really creative too, because it's just, you know, it goes places I never dreamed that we'd ever go.
Well, thank you. I laugh because I think I was answering a question in an interview just earlier. And they were like, well, you know, how long had you been working on Triage before it came to Dark Horse? And I laughed, like, I put together the pitch like 4 or 5 days before San Diego Comic-Con last year. It was a last minute thing. You know, going into the show, I always like to have a couple things in my pocket depending on who I'm talking to. And I was like, I should probably have one more pitch, because I had one or two others to show people. And that's kind of when the idea came together. And all in the time I had, I put together the three main character designs and like a rambling paragraph. So when I sat down with my editor, who's Megan Walker, she edited me on Tomb Raider Inferno, and she's awesome. And she was like, yeah, pitch me some ideas. And I was like, all right, I've got this idea. Here's some character designs, and just kind of told her the general idea. And she was like, that's cool. You know, write it down and send it to me after the show. And I did. And within a couple weeks, it was approved. And then it was like, oh, okay, I've got to make this idea work more than just like, here's a cool idea. Whereas some things I've pitched before, I've worked on for 6 to 8 months or a year, getting everything like cleaned up and perfect. And none of those have been picked up. But this one, which was like just a cool idea with some character designs, really kind of struck a nerve with the people at Dark Horse. And I really appreciate their faith in me and allowing me to really dig in and do some fun stuff with it.
Now, The Frozen was a Dark Horse too, wasn't it?
You know, that one was actually a Top Cow series.
Top Cow, that's right. That's right. No, I forgot that.
I bounced back and forth between Dark Horse and Top Cow my whole career pretty much so far. So cool. If I'm not doing one book with one, I'm doing one with another. So
good, but I love them no matter where they come out. It's sometimes people have to follow creators where they go. You know, some people, well, let's just say Marvel people like to buy Marvel books.
Yes.
And I think these days you can't really depend on everything that you're going to want to come out under one company. You've got to kind of follow the creators as well. And so that's what I do with you. And I see your name someplace, I buy the book because I know it's going to be a great book.
Well, thank you so much. I'm doing my best to reward that, or to, you know, reward that loyalty.
Now, I got to ask you something about the first time that the three female characters meet, shall we say.
Okay.
The superhero one acts the way that I expect superheroes to act, shall we say.
We can say that Orbit is kind of a jerk. And I absolutely love her kind of as a dirtbag. Who has a lot to learn and grow. I mean, when you are the most praised and loved superhero in the world, it's going to go to your head a little bit. And you can definitely see that she's got some growing to do as a person, you could say.
Which is good. I like that. Now, and of course, when we see her initially, you know, the team, looks like the team leader says, let's put our heads together and figure out how to. And she just says, bitch, please, I got this. And she goes on and takes care of business, which I got a huge kick out of because, you know, that personality comes out when they actually meet.
Yes.
Which is quite fun. So, you've got these characters. The same person has different facets to the characters. I'm enjoying that so much.
Well, thank you. Yeah, they've been a lot of fun to read. I mean, to write, to come up with these. How they interact and how they play off each other has been a blast.
Well, I'll say they're a lot of fun to read because I the first two issues when I got a chance to read, they're really great. I got to ask one more thing about one more female character.
Sure.
There's a guide of – she says that she's their guide. Yep. And is she another of another Evie from a different universe or what's the deal with her?
You know, there's a little bit more given about her in, I think, issue 2.
Okay.
But there's not as much time spent on exploring who she is, other than the basic idea of, like, what she's there to help them do.
Okay.
There's, you know, in the story itself, like I said, we're doing 5 issues, and I feel I've written it in such a way that gives it a fairly satisfying conclusion, but I still think there will be lots of questions afterwards, and hopefully not to an annoying degree, but to a degree that it makes you go back through and look through everything and try to find the connections that you might not have on the face value. So we'll see once 5 issues are out how successful that was, but that's kind of what I'm going for as a goal, because I like things that give you just enough answers to make you go back and read some more to try and fill in the gaps.
Now, I have to talk about something that was in issue 2. There's a bit of dialogue. Tab is talking to the three of them, and she says something that made me laugh out loud. She's got, you know, because there are, well, let's just say, when she says, why are there, are you a triplet? Is this a, what was that show, a clone thing? I busted out laughing when I read that because, you know, it made me think of, I had, in some levels, thought about Orphan Black.
Yes.
With this. And I love the fact that you dealt with that in the discussion amongst themselves. I really enjoyed that because self-awareness is not something comics are known for. But for you to do that and to deal with that thing that somebody might criticize, say, oh, this is just Orphan Black, you actually dealt with that. And I thought that was a really wise way to go about that and to kind of diffuse that criticism if somebody wanted to make it.
Thank you. Yeah, through rewrites, some of the self-aware pop culture references definitely had a lot to begin with, and I'm glad I limited them to the ones I did. But yeah, I think, you know, when you read a zombie comic or a zombie show, it doesn't matter. Like, rarely do you find a show that calls the zombies zombies. And I'm like, you know, zombies have been in our pop culture in this specific form since, like, Romero's Night of the Living Dead in 68. So why doesn't anyone be like, oh, that's a zombie? So I'm like, yeah, like, I want characters are self-aware enough in the worlds they are to put a hat on the things that stick out, because we're doing it as an audience.
I like the fact that it was Tab that said that.
Yep.
She's looking out from the outside, looking in, and she's kind of the observer.
Yes.
So that's going to be quite fun. So I like that. Okay, the first one hits, according to what I'm seeing, is on September 4th.
September 4th, yes.
That's the first one. Are they going to be monthly, like the first week of the month after that?
I believe so, yeah. It should be monthly every 4 weeks, I believe. I don't know if we'll shift to the second week of the month after that or if we'll stay first week. But yes, it will be a regular 5-issue miniseries. We will have a variant cover for each issue. We'll be announcing the first issue variant I think on Thursday or Friday. So by the time this podcast is up, it'll be out there. And they're just their regular AB covers. There's no like have to order 15 in order to get one. They'll just, you know, you pick the one you like or grab both of them. All the way through the run, we've got some really cool artists working on variant covers.
Oh, I was going to just ask you, are you doing the variants or somebody else doing the variants?
I'm doing the standard covers, the A covers, and then I have a different artist for each issue doing a B cover. And there's some gorgeous stuff. I think I've seen 4 of the 5 covers in various stages. 3 are complete and the other one's almost done. So, yeah.
So you're tempting us to get both of them is what you're
saying. You know, if you like pretty art, and I'm not going to hold it against you if you want to buy both. But if you only want one, you pick the one you like the best. So.
Okay. I want to ask, are the is the villain on both of those covers of number one?
No. Hunter is only, I think, on my cover in issue one. The issue one variant has the 3 main characters in a really cool design. And, you know, since it'll already be announced by the time this is out, it's a Hannah Templar. Hannah did all the covers for Tomb Raider Inferno. She's currently drawing Glow at IDW, and she has a book called Cosmonites coming out through Top Shelf, I think in September. And it is phenomenal. I've read like half of it already. Hannah is one of my favorite artists and cartoonists, and she just knocked it out of the park on the variant for this one.
See, I'm still enamored with the fact that you do so much in a book. I just, you know, that you've got a different letterer. The letterer is the only thing, well, that and the publishing are the things you're not doing, but you're doing pretty much everything else. That always floors me because that's so rare in comics. Usually everybody gets one thing. They're a writer and they don't draw, or there are some people become a writer artist, but you're a writer, artist, colorist. You know, you name it.
Yeah. Yeah. You know, I'd wanted to move in the direction of writing and drawing together for a really long time. Cause like you said, it's not a very common thing. I can only think of a handful of artists of cartoonists these days who both write and draw. And very rarely do you see that in a mainstream type book. And that's one thing I've wanted to move in for a very long time. So I'm super excited to have the opportunity to do this. I think before we started recording, I was mentioning like it is an exhausting job, not just for the amount of work, but I realized that comics is a collaborative nature, and I still love the collaboration in comics. I'm not going to say like I only want to work with myself from now on. I'm like, no, there's still plenty of writers and colorists that I would love to do stuff on and kind of bounce back and forth. But in comics, I didn't understand the emotional collaborative nature of storytelling in that, you know, as I'm working, let's say, The Freeze with Dan Wickline and Troy Pateri was on letters. I knew, even though I was doing pencils, inks and colors, I was working with the script on Dan had written the script. So I think there was that reliance or symbiosis or whatever you want to call it between the two of us to where we fed off each other's energy. And then Troy would do a great job lettering. So now that I'm doing all the roles myself there, I have a fantastic editor, and Frank Vetkovic, who lettered the house, is lettering the book and does a brilliant job, but I don't have the same creative, support system that you have in regular comics. So I found that really interesting because not having done anything to this scale all by myself, there's like, if I screw it up, then it's definitely on my shoulders. There's no sharing of the responsibility. So, once it comes out, I think a lot of that, that pressure I'm putting on myself will dissipate because I'm like, we'll be out there. But for working on it for 9 months in a vacuum, knowing like, oh, I better get this right, cause there's no one else to, to share the blame if it doesn't work. So
well, I don't think that'll be a problem because your Paradox, I thought was a fantastic book, you know, and it was one you did pretty much all on your own.
I did.
And of course The Freeze, when you did that artwork was really compelling and stuff too. So I never worked. One of the things I asked you before we started recording, I did want to bring it back up again.
Sure.
In the release, it talks about the fact that this is identified as your first creator owned book.
But yes.
Paradox, as I was asking you, I said Paradox is creator owned and all this good stuff. So you were saying that this had to do with the fact it was from like a major publisher.
Correct. Yeah. Like, you know, Paradox was a creator owned book that I did all myself. I did The House with Drew Zucker and then, you know, things like that. This is the first book that I'm doing everything by myself at a major publisher. So I think that's the best way to define that because I'm grateful for people like you who got Paradox and discovered it, but it wasn't like a wide release in comic stores. So
I'll just never forget that book because I saw you at a convention. I can't remember which one anymore, but it was tilted sideways. It was at a 90-degree different angle from most comics. And so as I was reading it, I was just, it does something different to your perception of the book when you do that. So I would like to see a Paradox too, if you ever get the
You know, I would totally love to. I'd have to figure out how to do that in a story, but I love that book so much. And I can't officially say, but another company has picked up the publishing rights and will be reprinting it at the beginning of next year. So it'll be in comic stores across the nation. So for those who haven't had a chance to get it from me, which is just like on my web store or in person, they're doing a reprinting of it with like a new cover. And it will be out at the beginning of next year. So as Triage is winding down, you'll have a new copy, new edition of Paradox will be in stores. So,
is it going to be much different, or is it going to be pretty much like the one that you did yourself?
Yeah, it'll be the same as the one I've done myself. Okay. So for people who've picked it up already, the only difference really will just be, I think I'm going to do a new cover, and then I'll talk to the company. Maybe we'll see, maybe a little addendum or something, but I don't think I'm going to change any of the story. It'll be what it was.
That was great. I love that book. That sold me on your stuff because I just loved it. I remember reading it and just, I had to run back the next day at the convention. Oh, I love this. It's just tremendous stuff. It's one of the great things to go on to cons is being able to meet people and to discover stuff like that. And you know, I got to ask you, of course, you're talking about going to San Diego. Do you have a booth there, or are you kind of on the floor? How are you going to do that?
Yeah, so San Diego next week, I'll just be on the floor. I'll be doing a panel with Dark Horse, two panels with Comics Experience, which is the online school that I teach with, that Andy Schmidt runs.
Yeah.
And then I will, let's see, I'll be doing a signing. I'll be doing a signing at Top Cow as well. Mm-hmm. And I'm also going to be doing some live drawing at the Dark Horse booth on Friday and Sunday for about 4 hours. I've got BioWare, Activision, EA, the video game company, is having artists do live drawing demos at, during the show of some of their characters. So I'm doing a Mass Effect drawing one day, and then another day I'm doing a Dragon Age / Anthem drawing. Mm-hmm. So that'll be super fun. And it gives me a place to sit down for a couple hours in a row, because if you've ever been to San Diego, you are on your feet all day long.
And barely moving on Saturday.
Yes.
Barely walk. And then somebody stops to take a picture of somebody in a costume. Why are you stopping? Don't stop. Keep going.
Yes. Diego. Yes.
San Diego is one of those things. I want to go to WonderCon. I've never been to WonderCon, and I'm anxious to go there because that's more of a comic-oriented thing.
It's a fun show, but it's a lot less crazy than San Diego. So
okay. Well, that's good to know. Which leads me to ask you now, because I saw you at a convention. What other conventions are you going to be at this year?
Sure. So I got San Diego coming up here in middle of July. And then the next show I'm doing is Rose City Comic Con in Portland, Oregon. And that will be just after the book is released. So we're going to try and do some sort of big launch or signing or event or something at the show to kind of kick off the release of the book. And then after that, I will be at New York Comic Con in Artist Alley again, which I've done for the past couple of years. Ryan, Katie, and I will always share a table. So that's the rest of the year for me.
I interviewed him recently about his book, Infinite Dark.
Oh, awesome. Yes.
Which was great. I love that book. That was great stuff. So, yeah, I think I saw you at New York last year. And I'm going to probably be there again this year, the way it's looking. So I always love to be able to get around and interview some folks. And I also get to find out what's happened since the last time I talked with that kind of stuff. So I like that. I'll get
you. For sure. That. Yeah, so, that'll be a lot of fun. I always love that show and getting to catch up with everyone.
Yeah, it's just a wild show. I actually prefer that to San Diego.
Okay.
Because it's just such an opportunity I'll bump into people that I've interviewed that I've never actually seen physically face to face before.
Oh, yeah.
I like that. San Diego is harder because of the huge layout, and everything's everywhere. And you know, like you said, a lot of people don't get booths anymore. They kind of go and they are on the floor. So catching up with them is tough.
It is tough, yeah. As a creator, I love the freedom of just wandering that show. But yeah, I love New York because Artist Alley is a separate area. It's its own little convention, and I can just sit down for 4 or 5 days and see all my friends. So,
yeah, that walking stuff gets to be tough after a while.
Ooh, yes, it does.
Now, of course, if people want to follow you and keep up with the stuff that you're doing, what social media do you use, and how can it get you?
Sure. So I'm on Twitter at Philip CV. And then both Facebook and Instagram is Philip CV Comic Art. And then I just have a website, which is philipcv.com, and it has links to social media. It's got an online store and a kind of like a portfolio of my different work and just basic stuff like that.
Okay, which is good. It's good to keep track of these good things. Do you have an art book? I'm trying to remember.
I don't have an art book. Nope. Mm. I haven't really done one yet. So.
Okay, because I could see that coming somewhere down the road. I think your art book, because I know there's several people I know who are artists that have been putting out art books, and they're doing very well. And I was thinking your art is great, so I would like to see an art book from you. That would be fun to buy.
Maybe someday. I think for the time being, I enjoy sequential pages more than anything. And you can do a section in an art book, but usually art books work better with kind of single pieces and process stuff. So we will see. Maybe when I get a little bit of time someday, that would be a lot of fun.
Yeah, it'd be great, because I've seen people Kickstarter it and get like massive amounts of money for it. So, you know, you could always do that and stuff. Have you ever done a Kickstarter?
You know, Paradox and both The House were actually Kickstarters. is how we funded the printing of those. So, yeah, I've done two campaigns now, and I've been involved in a couple others as contributors as well.
Cool. Very cool.
Yeah, I love Kickstarter and that platform and the way you can reach a different audience and stuff like that.
And build up a fan base.
Exactly.
Stuff like that. Now, you mentioned that you have some proposals in mind that you're going to take with you to San Diego. Are there other projects you're working on that we can talk about, or is this something you got to wait until things come to fruition? You know, you said there's Paradox is being picked up by somebody, but we can't talk about who yet. What's coming up that you can talk about?
Sure. No, that's a really good question, because in comics, you're always working on 45 different things. Mm-hmm. My main focus right now is Triage, just because of the amount of work, both mental and physical, it takes to get the book done. Dark Horse has about three other pitches of mine that are in the pipeline. None of them have been approved as of yet, but I'm going to talk to my editor at San Diego. There's a couple that she's really pushing for, which would be awesome. I think part of it will kind of be dependent on how well Triage performs and how well it's received. So if people really like it and buy the book and buy one for their friend and mom, then I'm sure that will make the other proposals a little bit easier to get approved. So we'll see. That's kind of like Triage is the main thing. And there's a couple things out there in the ether, and we'll wait to see kind of what connects here. And that's kind of what I'll be trying to firm up come probably New York Comic Con this year, because by then I'll be close to wrapping Triage up for myself.
Well, it's great stuff. I highly recommend this book to anybody. If you haven't ordered it yet, get to your local comic shop and tell them you want Triage. And it's from Dark Horse. And when Paradox comes around, make sure you get that too, whoever it is that's going to get that, because that was a good book too. That was good stuff. So, you just do such wonderful stuff. I love somebody that challenges me on several levels when I read a comic, and you do that every time I read your stuff. And boy, I hope that we get to keep you busy for a long time to come, because I'm really enjoying the stuff that you're doing. And man, keep it up.
Oh, thank you so much. I really appreciate it, and I would love to be able to do that. Hopefully we got more stories we can tell after this one.
People need dramatic examples to shake them out of apathy, and I can't do that as Bruce Wayne. As a man, from flesh and blood, I can be ignored, I can be destroyed, but as a symbol.
Get the latest from the comics universe. News, interviews, previews, and reviews. Listen to the weekly Wayne's Comics Podcast so you can keep reading your comics.
And that's it for this episode. Be back next time. I'll have another great interview with an excellent comics creator, something I'm sure you won't want to miss. But until then, keep reading your comics.